Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast for Connecting Faith. You can hear the show each Monday through Thursday at noon Central. And remember, there are even more shows available on our website, myfaithradio.com.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem, and this is Connecting Faith. And today, Monday, 14th, this is Columbus Day. That's correct. Isn't that right?
It's true.
Columbus set out not knowing where he was going. He didn't know where he was, and he didn't know where he'd been when he got back. So that's a man after my own heart. It sounds like this program. So we're
my great uncle Tim. Taught me the song. In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
True.
And so I always think of Uncle Tim on Columbus Day. Remember him fondly.
Sure. Being Norwegian, of course, we think of Leif Erikson, the fact that, you know, he showed up to the Americas, you know, 1,000 years before. No, 400 years before.
How could people have forgotten? That's what I've always wondered about Leif Erikson. How did people forget he came?
He was a quiet Norwegian, just didn't say a lot, you know, so.
Okay.
All right. Looking forward to today's broadcast. I do want to say first, though, we're in the middle of our Pastor Appreciation Month, and inviting you to call and or to go online and register your pastor or a ministry leader at your church for a free week-long retreat getaway in Colorado near Pikes Peak. Oh. And it's expenses paid, and it's a really great opportunity through Sunscapes Retreats, and you can go to myfaithradio.com to check it out. I was just looking at a list of some of the areas that we've heard from. Here's Canton, South Dakota, Carrington, North Dakota, Wanakee, Wisconsin, Delta, Iowa, Madison, Wisconsin, Valley City, North Dakota, Cook, Minnesota, Duluth, Minnesota, Laverne, Minnesota, Marshalltown, Iowa, Burnsville, Minnetonka, Cocado, Minnesota, Minneapolis, and churches from Reformed, Lutheran, Baptist, Community, United Methodist, Wesleyan. So it's just it's really a great a listing of pastors, nearly 100 strong that have already been registered. So I hope that you will take a moment to register your pastor, because it's going to be a great opportunity for them to enjoy a week away, and you would just love to be able to be the one that recommended them as a way of saying thanks for the great ministry you're doing, Pastor, and appreciate the church. So check that out online, myfaithradio.com. It was just a week or so ago, the former mayor of Detroit, got sentenced. You remember that story. Our guest today actually was Speaker of the House of Representatives in Michigan for a number of years before moved on to his present position as president of Justice Fellowship. And so, and we've talked to Craig DeRoche before, and we're going to spend some time talking about the correction system and Justice Fellowship, the great work they're doing, a ministry arm of Prison Fellowship. But Craig, thought maybe we'd just start with you've seen what's been happening in Detroit, and maybe just some comments, and maybe there's some connection too, even with the prison system, your former mayor getting a pretty stiff sentence. So welcome back to Connecting Faith, by the way.
Yeah, it's great to be with you, Neil, and thank you for having me on the show. And Detroit is it's a Greek tragedy being played out for all to view in America, because Detroit was the leader in personal income. It had the highest per capita income in America in the 50s, which would have meant that it had the highest per capita income in the world. And that was in the city, not the area, but actually in the city proper. And everything seemed to work. And what we're left with now is something far from that. And, you know, often our contemporary culture focuses on the balance sheet, you know, the number of residents, the amount of debt, what they spend on this, how many employees they have, but they don't get underneath the issues, and look to the human side of the story. And as Christians, much of what went wrong, we could, you know, identify by chapter and verse of what played out there. And so much of it is related to what our sense of justice is, in a Christian sense of justice, but also what, in an earthly sense, we've come to support and know as justice, you know, for the acts and the things that we do right or wrong while we're in a position of power, while we're living in a community here on earth.
Craig DeRoche is the president of Justice Fellowship. Before joining Justice Fellowship, he served as Speaker of the House of Representatives in Michigan, serving seven growing suburban Detroit communities in the Michigan legislature. He was named Outstanding Student Leader by the president of the college at Central Michigan University. And prior to joining Justice Fellowship, he was drawn into the work of advancing the mission of the fellowship through his own Christian experience and surrender after a lifelong addiction to alcohol. We might touch on that a little bit as we go along. He and his wife and family live in Michigan on the, did you say the sixth stop of the Pony Express? Or?
Yeah, the people say Novi. Huh, that's a weird name. Where'd it come from? N-O period, Roman numeral V-I. It was stop number six on the stagecoach route out of Detroit toward Lansing. So they didn't get far. We're only about 30 miles out of Detroit, but apparently there were five other stops in those 30 miles. And it's a border town, a suburban town, and you know, we get to, as a leader of a legislative district that bordered Detroit, but also as a statewide leader, which, you know, the Speaker of the House has to play that role. I got to see a, you know, front row seat on a lot of, you know, the decisions that were being made in the city and also in the justice system.
Well, we want to talk a little bit about the justice system and do, even as you talked about, you know, that oftentimes we sort of focus on the balance sheet, but we want to look beneath the real issues. But if we look at the balance sheet, I think it's true the United States leads the world in the number incarcerated. That's a sort of unenviable position, it seems to me. How did we get to that place?
Well, there's been volumes written on this, but I think that what happened about 40 years ago, and a lot of this is related to drugs and alcohol. I know we're not going to speak too much about that, but if it's okay to give a little bit of my background and how I think God is using me, you know, today. I spent a life, a very young age, addicted to alcohol, and you know, that's lasted with me for 29 years. And I had to lose everything, you know, before I was willing to surrender. I like to say God did me the favor. He loved me enough to take away everything, so all that was left was to focus on Him. And He brought me up in such an amazing way, and you know, through those circumstances, was introduced to Chuck Colson. And so much of our criminal justice system, by 60 to 80% of the people that are incarcerated today or participating in any level of the justice system, have addiction problems to drugs or alcohol, legal or illegal, and that is really when our culture, about 40 years ago, took a stance that this behavior could be corrected with government workers, you know, and government policies and government investment. We really went down a road, which I think was, you know, I guess, you know, America has been described as an experiment, and you know, that's one of the good aspects about our country. But in particular, this aspect of pursuing a more just union has failed by nearly every measure, because during that period of time, we went from roughly 250,000 people incarcerated at the federal, state, and local level to over 2.5 million people incarcerated. We've gotten to the point where incarceration, probation, and parole accounts for one in every 33 Americans today, not ever in their life, but at this very hour, are under some correctional control of the state, of our entire adult population. In our African American community, the kids are probably in school all over the country today, and one in nine of them has a parent that is incarcerated today. Again, not ever in their life, but today. They'll be going home, one of their parents will be incarcerated. So we've sought solutions, you know, of this world and with our taxpayers' dollars that we thought would work, we thought would improve public safety, and we thought would correct behaviors. But, you know, they have not by and large, worked by any measure of what people expected they would receive. You know, there certainly has been success attributed to incarceration, and I would personally attribute, a number of things of where it does well in removing threats from society. But by and large, we've missed the point on a human level, and it's cost us dearly.
I was thinking you talk about 40 years ago or so, and it seems like it's probably about that same time that we were making decisions too regarding even mental health, and we hear so much about maybe issues of homelessness that you know, these are kind of our inability to deal properly with the mental health issues, and so we've gotten it seems like the whole area of incarceration has become kind of a major unintended consequences.
Yes, it most city county jails would tell you today in America, and I'm not disparaging anybody, this would come from both the mental health administrators for that county or city as well as the corrections officers. They would say that the largest mental health institution in that city or county is the jail. And that follows its way all the way up into the federal system where we've seen a remarkable growth in the number of persons incarcerated and in the criminal justice system in general that have mental health issues. And, our organization, Justice Fellowship, part of the Prison Fellowship Ministries founded by Chuck Colson, what we have to sort through and where we try to come along elected leaders and serve and support their reform efforts is with the difficult decisions that need to be made, because somebody has a mental health issue or has an addiction problem, but they've done something that is illegal. In many cases, they've created a victim. And so we have to work toward, helping that person, pay the penalties, become accountable, for what they've done wrong. And at the same time, try to have a system in place that while they are receiving that retributive, restitution-based punishments, that they're put in a position where they are less likely to commit a crime. And that is, over the past 40 years, what has been the missing ingredient to the cake that our government leaders from the presidents on down, have said that what they have all said, leaders for 40 years, is we need to get tougher with people. We need to have stiffer penalties. But nowhere in that formula have leaders said, because this will make it less likely that person will commit future crimes. And that is what has been taken away, and that is where I think our public should be most concerned. Our leaders, we should expect far more from them. The purpose of the criminal justice system is not to invent a time machine to go back and eliminate crimes that have already occurred. But every effort that we do, even if somebody is confined to prison for the remainder of their life, should be geared at avoiding, the future victims being created, future crimes being committed by that person. And we haven't addressed that in an open and honest way in this country.
We'll address it here in a moment as we continue our discussion with Craig DeRoche, president of Justice Fellowship, the criminal justice and public policy reform arm of Prison Fellowship. Justice Fellowship was founded 30 years ago by the late Charles Colson, and Craig has served in this role here for several years as the president of Justice Fellowship. We're going to talk about the principles of restorative justice found in the Bible, because that is at the heart of what Justice Fellowship is all about. And look forward to talking more with Craig in a moment. If you'd like to talk to Craig as we talk a little bit about the system, the justice system, you can join us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Or you can always go Facebook, Connecting Faith with Neil Stavem. More with Craig DeRoche in a moment.
I have a miniature deer, and now its legs are broken. It happened when I moved my desk, and he fell to the ground. And I was kind of annoyed at first, but then I saw the point. So now it's all good. We are all broken in some way, but through Christ, we are made whole. And we are given abilities to do amazing things, not because we have to, but because we get to. It's the breaking of our pride God desires and our realization that we need God's grace just as much as everyone else. 1 John 1:9 says we are to freely admit our sin, confess it, and He is faithful to forgive and completely clean us up while loving us through it all. Hurting people hurt people, but broken people help people. And often the people who reject us are doing so because they're hurting and they just can't forgive. Because when they're able to receive His grace for their own junk, then they can give grace every day. For more encouragement, visit DebbieGriffith.com.
Past the hour, talking today with Craig DeRoche, president of Justice Fellowship. And before the serving as justice in Justice Fellowship, DeRoche served as the Speaker of the House of Representatives in Michigan. And he has got a great story on his own to tell. And we're talking today about, you know, what's happening in our world and our society and some of the unintended consequences of the getting stiffer penalties. It hasn't led to less crime. Or I suppose maybe in some ways, but it's led to all sorts of challenges. And I want to talk about Justice Fellowship, the arm of Prison Fellowship that works for criminal justice reform. And I know at the heart of what you talk about in reform is the principle of restorative justice. Craig, talk a little bit about what that means, how that is distinguished from, do we have justice in the system now, I guess? Maybe that's the first question.
Well, we do. You know, there is justice in the system, but where we're attacking this at Justice Fellowship, where we really wanted to contribute to the debate, the national dialogue on this, and an awakening within the Christian community, is to the concept of restorative justice. This fall and going into the spring, we will make this available to you and your show, hopefully even in advance of its general release. We've done research in these areas to see where we've gotten, first of all, the model of restorative justice. And the three folks that are involved in that, we believe, are the victim of the crime, the offender in the crime in the community. That when a crime occurs, it affects and it impacts all three of those primary players. The fourth and ancillary player is the government that our Constitution and our communities set up as the mediator and the arbitrator of this justice and seeking a more just union. But the government is supposed to be a service organization, not a primary participant. And just as in the healthcare system, when the primary relationship was supposed to be between the person who was ill and their doctor, and when a third party intervened, it set off a structural imbalance that we continue to wrestle with today, that the justice system had a similar imbalance in that we've largely delegated the justice to the government as the primary player in this, the government and the offender. The crime is not a crime against the victim, it's a crime against King George. And that's the kind of justice that I think our forefathers cautioned us against. And we see that behavior that, you know, starts and continues at the most entry level of criminal justice, where in the city of New York, you have police stopping and frisking people, for no reason. They state they have a quota of people they have to stop and frisk and empty their pockets on a monthly basis, and that creates 47,000 new drug criminals for possession every year. You know, all the way up to what we're seeing at the NSA or the IRS and the oversight of our emails and other national justice conversations that we're having, but we lost sight of the fact that what we're supposed to be focused on is doing this for the benefit of the community and the victims of crime. And I think that that is the heart of where this is, and that is why we want to come out with a document, because it's an important concept that we not only say, but we give people visually the opportunity to see and to read about what that looks like when you replace the victim in the community with the government, you know, so the relationship becomes between the government and the offender exclusively, where the incentives get put out of place and where the perversions and the moral hazards play out. And what that has done in human and in financial terms is staggering, you know, absolutely staggering. And I will give you my personal commentary. I believe the numbers will bear this out, that it is consequential not only to, you know, the costs and the expenses, but you follow it through it, it is very easy to understand that this has contributed to the decline of the traditional family in America. This has contributed to the decline of self-sufficiency in America. And when you have those two things gone in someone's life, it increases the odds that they will commit new crimes, so it actually makes us less safe even after all of the expense and the trouble. And so that is why, you know, I think it's important for a faith-based institution like Justice Fellowship to come forward and say, we've seen this before. When you look to the government to do something that is corrective in the area of where the culture and the morals and the values are what need to be checked and informed and grown, you may actually create a worse situation than you had when you first put the government in charge of it in the first place. And I think that's what we're seeing play out in America in criminal justice today.
Just, Stephen, as you were talking, just reminded me of, saw a report not too long ago, and just talking about, and as you said, that particularly among African Americans, the high incarceration rate, that we're talking about finding solutions in urban communities, that we want to promote marriages, and yet there aren't any marriageable men, basically, because they're incarcerated, can't find work, and so it's just, you know, these we've incentivized all the absolutely wrong things, haven't we?
We incentivize convictions, you know, arrests and convictions is how you draw your money, you know, to pay your salaries and grow the force that you have. And you take a city like Detroit, you have a 50% arrest rate of murders, one of the top four murder capitals of the world. And you've incentivized the police apparently not to go get the murderers, but to round up every other teenage person in town and give them criminal convictions so you can draw down more federal and in-state money for possession of this or you know, doing that or, you know, whatever else it is that you rack up the misdemeanor and the felony record for, and that funds your local police force, but it degrades the culture and the potential of these, you know, young men, you know, in particular, to become self-sufficient members of a family and provide for and raise their own children. So, yeah, there are consequences. They are real. And I believe, by the way, it's the incentives that lead to the results. Everyone's under a lot of pressure, and if you're running a police department and you need to make your payroll and you need to do what you think is right, you follow the money. And if the money is to have you go out and arrest more people and get easier convictions on them. I just was at a debate with many African-American pastors last week in Washington, D.C., that it's not entirely race-based because the police chief and the mayor, you know, could very well be African-American. It's that the folks are poor. And what does the Bible tell us about that? You know, the poor, the oppressed, you know, the orphans. But they're the easiest to arrest and convict. And that's where we as Christians should be concerned about what we are structurally encouraging our government to do in how we allow them to spend our tax dollars.
Justice Fellowship is the topic today. Craig DeRoche, president of Justice Fellowship. It's the arm of prison fellowship that works for the criminal justice reform, reflecting the principles of restorative justice found in the Bible. And they advocate for reform through grassroots lobbying and working closely with federal and state government officials. And they give advice and publish articles. And we're going to talk more a little bit about restorative justice, get into victims' rights. And one of the questions that maybe we want to address is, you know, is the solution just to make fewer things legal or illegal? So, you know, marijuana, for example. We'll get Craig DeRoche's perspective on that. We talk issues of justice fellowship. Love to have you join the conversation. If you have a question or this has sparked a thought for you today, you're welcome to chime in and be a part of the program. You can do so by calling 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Or if you want to drop us an email, you can go to our website at myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's a link right there, myfaithradio.com. More with Craig DeRoche in just a moment. Looking for solutions today, thanks to Justice Fellowship. It's one of the important ministries that is making a difference. It's the Criminal Justice and Public Policy Reform arm of Prison Fellowship. Justice Fellowship founded about 30 years ago by the late Chuck Colson. And Craig DeRoche is now president of Justice Fellowship after serving as in the House of Representatives in Michigan for a number of years and has been a leader, has his own story, his journey through years of alcohol addiction, and has some great insights he's sharing with us today and talking a little bit about restorative justice, what that looks like, and how we need to focus on victim and offender and community. But, Craig, I just sort of brought up the idea is a solution to make fewer things illegal, you know, marijuana, for example.
Well, you know, I think that the most important thing that our country could do is to have a conversation on drug use and addiction. I think that the truth has been lacking for 80, 90, you know, 100 years in our country. And the information, the medical, the scientific information is available to us today, and yet the public is shielded from it and largely draws its conclusions on what is good for people or bad for people, or perhaps even, you know, implied it within the Christian community, what is a sin or what isn't a sin, based on whether it's legal or not, you know, the drug. And what we see is a squeezing of the balloon. You know, the drugs, to me, somebody that lived in addiction for 29 years, off and on, is that you squeeze the balloon. The drugs are not the problem. You know, it's somebody's solution other than God. For what is going on inside of them, their fear, resentment, anger, guilt, shame, and they turn to drugs instead of God. And whether the drug is legal or illegal, we have a massive, massive problem in our culture. We have a culture that had 136.5 million legal prescriptions for the narcotic Vicodin written in 2012. Let me repeat that. There's about 200 million American adults today. We had 136.5 million legal prescriptions for a narcotic written last year. It has been estimated that as many as 20% of mothers raising young children take antipsychotic medication such as Klonopin or Xanax. We have a culture that is turning to drugs, both legal or illegal, at extraordinarily high levels, and we don't share with people in the churches, in our communities, and from the government officials that regulate these things, what the drugs actually are and the effects that they have on the body, and the contemporary examples of what addiction looks like. Because I think people, we make it easy for people to stay uninformed because they believe well, I'll deal with this later. It's not like I'm breaking a law. And so I think rather than just legalizing drugs, we should open up the discussion almost to how we talk about cigarettes that are legal. You know, where the predisposition is and the acknowledgement is these are bad for you. These will, you know, lead to all sorts of bad things happening in your family, in your life, with your health. They could very well end your life. My younger brother died of an overdose on prescription pain medication at prescribed levels last year. You know, but we don't do that with drugs. And I think that we do our culture a disservice in the secular world as well as in the Christian world by not having that conversation.
I want to focus on several aspects of the work of Justice Fellowship, and one of them fits nicely in with a caller here, wishes to remain anonymous, but just looking to kind of help a family member get the life back together again. Go ahead. You're on with Craig DeRoche from Justice Fellowship.
Hi, Craig. I was listening, and I was really interested in what you're talking about, because my son, in the gist of it, was recently, not recently, in his 20s, convicted of a fifth-degree gross misdemeanor for sexual misconduct under Minnesota statute position of authority. He served 2 years probation, and he's required to register as a sex offender in Minnesota for 10 years. He has no other record other than this, and there's no other problems, and he is a Christian, and he has repented. But now recently, he's been married 6 months, and he's trying to find a break for employment, you know, living conditions, dreams, all that stuff. And nothing can hold or stick because the registration and criminal record bar him from any real chances of getting ahead or even back on track. So, you know, now he's got a wife to support, you know, a future family, you know, and he wants to contribute to society and better himself as a human being, but the system isn't allowing for it. And so it's like, where do we go from here? You know, because he's really frustrated.
Well, I really appreciate your call. And for all of the listeners out there that might be wondering, is this an anomaly? Is this just something that one family is experiencing in Minnesota? I would have you know that this is the practice for all of the 65-plus million people with criminal records in America. We largely exclude folks that have been convicted, whether or not, you know, most of them, you know, other than the remaining, you know, probably 4 or 5 million in the system, have paid back their debt to society. And we actively work against their being self-sufficient, staying in a traditional marriage, and providing for their own family. It is as I would call, my previous work was in the insurance profession before I entered elective politics, a moral hazard. You know, what we're doing with the policies of the state is we're putting moral hazards in the way of somebody living their life as we would want them to live it as fellow Christians. And Justice Fellowship is working with large employers at this very hour to try to change their internal policies and to provide leadership for smaller employers to make this change. But this is a cultural change, and I do not believe it is something that can be done with just the passing of a law, you know, or a mandate. This is something that we have to bring into the workforce and the employers and actually have them adopt and train for these changes in policy. You know, for your relative today, I would encourage you to continue your prayers and to continue encouraging them to grow spiritually, because this person that's talking to you right now was told when I went out to apply for jobs after I was arrested that I would unlikely get a job even working the docks in Costco with what it said about me on Google. The case was eventually thrown out, but in this digital world, employers do exclude folks, but God has a bigger plan for all of us. And if we use it as an opportunity to grow in our spirituality and our dependence on God, I believe that you know, the circumstances can be, you know, presented to your family. And my prayer on this radio show would be that God would demonstrate His power and His grace and His way of life through your loved one in a way that others would come to know God and what He is capable of in this world. So my heart is with you today, and our organization continues to work on this every day.
Just speaking of prayer, reminds me we could take a moment just to pray for this listener and her son. Lord, we ask that you'd intercede and work on behalf of this this listener and the pain that her son's going through as he's seeking to put life back together again, and with his responsibilities as a husband and a provider, that you would open up doors of opportunity, you would draw him close to you and continue to lead the way and bring people around him that would encourage him and build him up in the faith, and let him be a shining light for you, we pray in Jesus' name. Craig, this is just one listener among many who may have similar stories, are there resources at places like Prison Fellowship or Justice Fellowship that can offer some help and direction? What do you recommend?
And this is a little bit self-serving, but we are a mission-based organization, and our mission is to correct these circumstances. And I would encourage, the listener that shared time, I didn't mean to be off-putting. I didn't hear son, and I wasn't sure of the relationship. So there was a click on my phone, so I said her loved one. But, especially the family members of, children or brothers or sisters or nieces and nephews, come to justicefellowship.org. Join our network of growing advocates all over the country. It's easy to do. Join, with your email. It does not cost any money. And you'll be part of a growing army of Christian advocates, tens of thousands strong and growing every day, that are being mobilized and activated in the states and at the federal level to support these changes. And even when it's not going to be a government change, we need those advocates to let the employers know that change their policies, that the Christians in their communities are applauding their efforts and supporting them.
Craig, where is Justice Fellowship making the biggest impact? I mean, what are you most maybe encouraged by or have seen some breakthroughs perhaps?
The largest breakthroughs today, and not just because it's glitzy and glamorous to cite the highest government that we're working with, because, that's not criteria that I would go by, but God is working most noticeably in the United States Senate today. We are, our organization is being called in, probably 2-3 times a week by different United States senators from both parties that are seeking to bridge gaps between their interests and those of their colleagues across party lines. We have Senator Leahy, a self-described liberal from Vermont, working with Senator Rand Paul, a Christian and a more libertarian voice, from Kentucky. We have Senator Lee from Utah working with Dick Durbin of Illinois. We have Senator Inhofe from Oklahoma, a very strong Christian conservative, working with Mary Landrieu, a liberal from Louisiana, and on and on and on through the list. And it is absolutely amazing what God is arranging, and Justice Fellowship serves there every day, and I am confident that God has big things in store for justice reform at the federal level. And, along with that, the seeds are being planted in several states in our country, and we want your listeners to know that it's available to be planted and grow and bear fruit in your community as well. We see a lot of these projects start and work all the way through to completion within a calendar year, which is unheard of with major structural reform and in other areas of government. So we want you to participate. We want you to bring your ideas and come in and share with our growing network.
Well, you think if you can get some of those senators to work together that, you know, God's got a little plan going on, I think. That's
why I credit God, because I am only so good at my political spin.
Yeah.
But when I see these divergent views coming together on principle and based on their similar values, I have to I just have to be grateful to see God's power even in a place that has performed as poorly as it has, as the United States Senate, seeing unification and fellowship is amazing.
May need to have you just to offer some thoughts on the budget, but that's another story, and we'll save that. We're going to continue our discussion there with Craig DeRoche in just a moment. Justice Fellowship, he's the president of Justice Fellowship. JusticeFellowship.org is the website. I encourage you to check it out and find out how you can add your voice and see change take place. And we know we have a biblical mandate about that. We'll talk a little bit about that in a moment as well. And welcome your calls, 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. More with Craig DeRoche in a moment.
What are you willing to do to go beyond the call? This is Wayne Peterson, president of HCJB Global. Pastor Tim, who ministers in Thailand, knew that God had called him to reach beyond the walls of his church, to be a bigger part of reaching the nation for Christ. After 4 years of effort, Pastor Tim was granted a radio license by the Thai government. Because of his vision, HCJB Global and other partners joined forces to launch the station. When our trainers arrived at the station, they were greeted by 24 local believers, each wanting to learn radio, so they could take those skills and share the gospel in their communities. Today, that radio station is thriving. God planted a vision in one man who was obedient to the call. Get excited about what God lays on your heart to do. Go beyond the call. This is Wayne Peterson. What is God asking you to do today? Make it a day that you go beyond the call. And then visit us online at hcjb.org.
Forty-seven past the hour, talking with Craig DeRoche, president of Justice Fellowship. It's the Criminal Justice and Public Policy Reform arm of Prison Fellowship. Started years ago by the late Chuck Colson. JusticeFellowship.org is the website. Craig DeRoche is the president of the organization. We're talking about Justice Fellowship. They're advocating for reform through grassroots lobbying and working closely with federal and state government officials and reflecting principles of restorative justice found in the Bible. We talked about the importance of understanding that there's the victim, the offender, and the community. The government has a role to play, but not forget the victim. I guess if someone's listening today has been a victim, maybe what words would you encourage to them? And are there some ways that we can advocate even in that position to see change take place?
Well, really, that's another area where we believe, you know, Christians should focus a lot of their energy. I think that there's a tendency within a lot of prison ministries to focus almost exclusively on the transformation of the offender, which is what, you know, I believed when I would read Matthew 25 were the instructions of Christ. But I've come to recognize, as somebody that as I grow spiritually in Christ, that my growth came when I took responsibility for what I did. You know, that my spiritual growth, where I could actually feel and see and come to know the Lord, was through the experience of reconciliation. You know, God, when we repent and when we are redeemed in Christ, that is free. God paid that price for us. Jesus paid it at the cross. But the reconciliation, the work toward restoration, if we deny that as Christians, that responsibility, you know, of trying to make right what they've done wrong, we're denying them the spiritual growth that I think God wants them to have. And that is where, you know, too often we look past by saying, well, we can afford to have the criminal justice system for the benefit of the victim, and somebody pays back their debt to society with their costs and their fees being paid to that government instead of the victims. And their service to that government instead of to victims, and then they're paid back when their term is over, instead of relating what it is that the retributive punishment was for the benefit of the reconciliation with that community and with the victim. So we believe that structurally, again, that we've gotten it wrong, and we encourage victims. One of our leaders that works with Justice Fellowship, named Brooks Douglas, he just received our highest service award for Prison Fellowship Ministries. He was a young man, and his family, his home was invaded, and his parents were murdered, and he and his sister were shot and left for dead. And this was about 25 years ago, and he went on to graduate college and law school and was the youngest state senator elected in Oklahoma's history, and passed a series of victims' rights bills there in Oklahoma for the very principles and reasons that I just explained, that it isn't just about revenge or retribution. It's about the spiritual restoration and the healing that we want to have with the victim and the community, as well as the transformation of the offender. And Brooks Douglas works with us very frequently and provides a lot of leadership. And we're actually working as an organization with victim rights groups to pass a national constitutional amendment recognizing the victims in the court of law, so the government can no longer push them aside and must communicate with them what's going on in a case and seek their input. You know, the government still is the power that decides, because that's the decision we've made as a culture, but they can no longer just disregard and exclude victims from the process. And so there is work to be done in victims' rights as well as in the transformation of the individuals.
Well, even as you say, we kind of focus a lot on the offender, but it must be probably saddening as you reflect on it about how many of those that are offenders could be contributing members of society. I mean, obviously there's some people that have pretty savvy business skills. They've just been using it in, for the wrong means. Or Ryan and I were talking about the movie Catch Me If You Can. You know, the master counterfeiter was turned around and used his skills to spot others. It seems like there's probably a lot of opportunity there that we're missing if we are willing to take a different direction.
Absolutely, and I think about all of the political leaders that, you know, we started the show talking about. Kwame Kilpatrick, mayor of Detroit, that got 28 years in prison. Rod Blagojevich got 14 years in prison. Both had young children and families, and neither were a threat to anybody, you know, from a physical violence, you know, home invasion type category of offender. And in both of their cases, no consideration was given for them to pay back the damage that they had done to Illinois or Detroit. They will spend their time laying in bed, you know, for 14 and 28 years respectively. And so I do think there's a lot to be said that we need to hold people responsible, but we need to advance our culture, and we need to apply our Christian values and our principles, which would bring healing all the way around the circle. I think people would rather hear that Rod Blagojevich was doing work when he got up from his prison cell and went down the hallway to assist the authorities or to pay back those that he had wronged, the taxpayers in Illinois, instead of just laying in bed. And that will help him grow spiritually as well and help him progress. And that should be our interest in Christians. And that is, to me, the message within Matthew 25.
Now, Craig, it seems like there's a lot of efforts to marginalize faith in, across society, and I assume that's maybe the case in the corrections as well, that, studies from Byron Johnson and others suggest that it's the faith-based programs that are really making the difference in terms of lowering recidivism. What are you finding?
We are finding that that our values, and this would come as no surprise to Christians in your audience listening, when applied, yield better results than secular money, education, drug therapy, counseling, and every other method that you could imagine creating or funding yields less of a result than somebody who is introduced to the values, the principles, the morals, and the foundation of living their life a different way, and being provided a wonderful solution that came at such a high price, but that's available to all of us. We see that work, and it doesn't fail when people give themselves to it. And too often, our secular government partners not only don't encourage that solution to be made available, they actually actively discourage that from being made available to people. And that's a fight for religious liberty and freedom that we're joined by so many wonderful individuals and organizations from all over the world, but we need everyone there. We need your stories. We need your efforts and your voice to make sure that we're bringing that word, bringing that light into the darkest corners of our culture, if we are to live in a safer community going forward.
Greg Droesch, my guest today. Another reason why you want to be a part of Advocate Network at Justice Fellowship. JusticeFellowship.org is the website. Craig, we only have about a minute left or so. Is there a definition, a working definition that you use when you talk about justice? I mean, do we really know what that means?
Justice to us is the pursuit of the restoration, of the victim, the increased public safety of the community, and the transformation of the individual from a criminal lifestyle to a self-sufficient, crime-free life. And that is what we seek to pursue in our organization. And we know that we live in a fallen world, so it's not something we can do in our own power. But we try every day in our organization to work in community and fellowship to humbly serve the Lord in advancing His justice, because that is where we see the greatest results.
Look forward to chatting again down the road with Craig Droesch, president of Justice Fellowship. It's the criminal justice and public policy reform arm of Prison Fellowship. You can find out more online, justicefellowship.org. Craig, blessings to you, and I wish you continued favor with leaders at all levels of government, as well as, showing how justice really can be accomplished.
Thank you, Neil, and I hope to be on the show soon.
Craig Droesch joining us today here on Connecting Faith. And check out their website, justicefellowship.org. We'll have a link up on our website. And I want to encourage you to get the podcast of today's program, and you can pass it on to a friend or listen to it again. You can go to myfaithradio.com, and then just click on Connecting Faith to listen to the show. I encourage you to check it out. And again, don't forget, we are in the midst of our October Pastor Appreciation Month, and it's a great opportunity for you to say thank you to your pastor and spouse, a chance to relax and recharge at a wonderful retreat center in Colorado, and it's free, all taken care of. So sign up your pastor today by going to myfaithradio.com, myfaithradio.com, and share a comment or two from your pastor about why they should be nominated. I'd love to hear that, and we'll share some of those on the air here in the days to come. Thanks for listening to Connecting Faith.